Then left. Where did you live when your husband went to Russia then? Did you stay in Seattle? Or where did you go?
No, we, I lived in the, when my husband went to Russia, I stayed in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then after that, when he came back, we stayed on a while, and then I, well, we came to Los Angeles. We went to in Oakland is when I left my husband.
And that was now during that whole period from say the time of the general strike and right after your son was born until you left your husband in 1931. Were you working in there, or you weren't very active then?
No, the only activity that I had is what I did here amongst all the people.
Uh-huh. So during the almost all during the 1920s, you didn't do very much then.
No, I didn't.
So it was after you left your husband in the 30s that you became active again. Is that it?
Yeah. That's why when my son, it was a depression time.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband says, "What can I do? What can I do? What am I going to do with two children?" You know. I said, "You see these same things? I can still work." You know? And that's when I went up to hometown then, and I opened up that little tailor shop. And I don't know, I have a picture somewhere.
I think I had it. It was there. By the time you left him, though, then, you, up until that time then, for those years, you were just working him and helping him in his business.
Yeah,
is that it?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until you went back up.
1931.
It wasn't until you went back up to the home colony that you started working again. In other words.
Yeah, and see, and then when I after that and after 32, I came back. I stayed there for 2 years, and then I came back to here to Los Angeles.
To Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And that's when you became involved. Really became involved in the Amalgamated.
Yeah, because they knew me. All I had to tell them to. Well, I am, and they knew me.
So, in other words, Rebecca, between about 1919, when your youngest son was born, and when you came back to Los Angeles, you had kind of dropped out of a lot of activity, hadn't
you?
Yes,
at that time, you know, somewhat, you know, but still kind of,
Now, were you helping your husband in his business? Was that it?
No.
You just stayed home?
I stayed home most of the time, yeah.
So you were just staying home, taking care of your children and being a housewife?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Now,
when I came back in 1934 here, that's when I started being all over again.
Okay.
Then
now,
I was a delegate here from my union into union at the council.
To the board here?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, were you working in big shops in Los Angeles? Were those big shops?
Los Angeles, well, they have a summer room. And the last shop I worked was at the pictures here.
Okay.
A Louis Roth. Very nice shop. Very fine. I worked for them until I retired.
Now, in the 30s, were the shops organized, or was it just the beginning in Los Angeles?
In the 30s, there was hardly anything doing it, because it was everything, you know, it was a depression time, and people sold up a lot of stuff.
Now, did you stay in shops for much longer times then, once you came to Los Angeles? Did you work for longer stretches in the same shop?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked for quite a number, but the last shop I worked was for 9 years.
In the same shop?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So that was from about 1940 till you retired?
48.
Uh-huh.
They gave me a response to the
shop. Those first 6 years, though, when you first came here, what kind of shops did you work in? Do you remember?
Oh, different places, different shops. And then we traveled around. We weren't here all the time. We went to in Oakland one time, and my husband was writing.
Well, after you left him, I mean.
Yeah, after I left him, that was when I came, when I made up to home.
Mm-hmm. And then when you came back to Los Angeles.
Yeah. that's, I worked for little different shops, little small shops and big shops. It didn't matter where I worked. It was all union shops.
They were already unionized?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have to try and organize that?
Oh, no. They were all organized, all union shops.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And
yeah,
what?
There was one shop, Rosenblum's, now, it used to be a ladies' tailor, and I worked for them, and they were not organized, and I tried to organize them, and they fired me, because they found out that I was a union lady. They didn't want a union lady, though. But later on they organized.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you remember any big fights or strikes in Los Angeles then?
Well, that was a big strike. The Rosenblum strike was a big strike, and they hit me on the head. I was picketing, and somebody threw a brick down. It hit me, but I just escaped it by an inch.
Mm.
And then the police got after us, and I went and told the general, the manager here of the old local, I told him, I said, listen, the police are after us, better look out.
Now, what kind of union work were you doing then during those years? You were a delegate to the board, you say?
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, how many women were on the board at that time?
I was the only one.
You were the only one?
Well, look. I was, for about 16 years or more, I one man died, and I took over, and another man died, I took over, another man died, I took over, until I said no more.
Now that was in the retirees club,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
But on the board of the,
Oh, yeah, I was in the union, I was in every, on every joint, on every section of the joint board, they had the building board, they had all kinds of different boards, you know. I was always there.
And usually the only woman?
Yeah, usually the only woman.
Now, how were you treated when you were on the joint board as a woman? How did the other men delegates treat you?
Well, some of them didn't. You know, but I know some of them. I know that when I was here, this man told me that when I organized the club, that they didn't want me. They didn't want a woman chairman. You see, they didn't like it. And some of them would just ignore me, think, oh, she's only a woman, what does she know?
Mm-hmm. Well, what happened when you went as a delegate to the conventions, like in 1930s when you went to the convention? Were there many women delegates at the convention, the Amalgamated Convention?
Here?
No, this panel that you showed me when you went to the Amalgamated Convention. Were there many women there?
Well, this was in 1950.
No, I mean the one in the 30s.
Oh, then? Yeah, well, yes, there was quite a few then in the 1930s, yes. Yeah.
Do you think that you were were the women taken seriously, or were they just
thing? I told you one time, after the war was declared, that was when, 1960, wasn't it? No, after the war was over, yeah. So when we had you couldn't say anything, you couldn't talk, you couldn't write anything against the war, against anybody. So this was in Seattle, and they had a big meeting at the Labor Temple, and I was just about ready that time. That was the time I was ready to give birth to my second boy. And I went up on the stage and I talked. And there was another woman there in the audience. I was the only one talked on the only woman. And there's another woman there, in the audience, I think she was a friend of mine, school teacher, and she said, Rebecca, how could you have the nerve to go up and talk with a belly like that? I said, it's no disgrace. It's no disgrace to have a big belly. I said, I'm married, and it's no disgrace. So, and these things never bothered me. Mm-hmm.
Now, during the First World War, Were you involved in any of those no conscription leagues? And did you know Louise Olivereau and those people in Seattle?
Who?
Louise Olivereau.
Oh, of course.
Uh-huh.
I got her in here.
Uh-huh.
Louise Olivereau.
Now, did you, were you active in talking against the war, or you had to be quiet?
Well, that's an action, very action. That's why I got into trouble. That's why they arrested me. That's why they arrested me. That's why, you see, because I came in this country illegally.
Well, now that was earlier, though, when they arrested you. That was way before the war.
Yeah, well, that was, it was when, let's see, 1912.
Mm-hmm. Now, you worked then in just a few shops in L.A. You stayed a long time in each of the shops.
Yeah.
And then you retired in 1948?
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you have to retire in terms of your age or what?
Well, it's not compulsory. You could say that I could have worked another year or two, but I say, like I said, get off the puck and let somebody else get on, see? And there were a lot of people out of work. Why should I keep it on? So I retired. I got $36 a month from retirement. That's the Social Security Society. And the union matched it. So I got $72 a month.
Now by this time your children were all grown. And
yes, they were grown. So. My younger boy was, he was doing odd jobs. He was going to school, but he was doing odd jobs. And he's there. What do you call him? He's called caddy the golf's.
Caddy? Golf caddy.
Yeah, golf caddy.
Well, how old were you when you retired, Rebecca?
I was 65.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then once you retired, though, you started all these other activities.
I couldn't stay home. You know, I used to be out the union. The union was like part of, it was my second home. I was on the joint board, and I was in the bank board, and I was on the building board, and I was in the organizing board, and in all the other boards that they had. So I had to be there every day. I said, well, I said, there was only about three or four of us would sit around, and I said, just why do we sit around here and do nothing? Let us join a tired club. Can't we? So we went to the manager. He was Jerome Poser then, he's very nice. And I said to him, Jerome, I said, don't you think that we could join some kind of a retirement club? He says, go ahead, Rebecca, I'll help you, the place is yours. Go ahead, I started it.
So, and when was that you started it? What year?
49.
Oh, so it was just a year after you retired?
Yeah. And by the way, tomorrow, we're going to have they're going to have a meeting at 24th anniversary. And since this was organized, mm-hmm. a club.
That's now, this was, the club was a way for you, after being retired, to stay active in the union still, in other words.
What?
The club was a way for you to still keep active in the union,
oh, yes.
even though you were no longer working.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I organized a club and did what I could and tried to help others and talk to others and told others to come and even if you're retired, come back to the union. I said, the union did so much for you.
Now, what kinds of things did the club do? They would help with strikes and things in other words,
oh, yeah.
or what?
And they're helping campaigns a lot, too, you know. They do campaign work.
What kind of campaigns?
All kind of campaigns. Well, you know, it's a labor campaign. Mm-hmm. Like now they're working for what's her name, Tess Elmer, mm-hmm. for mayor, and you know, different kind mm-hmm. of liberal candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And see, and we meet once and twice a month. Let me see.
Okay, going back a little, there was something I wanted to ask you. During the 1920s, when you weren't working much, Was there any special reason, was there a special reason why you didn't work or were as active during that time period in the 1920s?
Well, in the 1920s, my son was born in 1919, and we lived in Seattle then, I think, and we tried to organize, I walked around and tried to organize women in the working circle, because I wasn't working at a tailor shop then, and I wasn't connected with a tailor shop, but I was connected with a working circle.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband belonged to the working circle, and I belonged to the working circle. And I couldn't see any women there, hardly any women. So that's why I tried to organize the working circle.
Now, you weren't working because he was able to make enough support you both,
in other words. Oh, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't feel it important to work yourself?
No.
Okay. That's all I know.
No. 21, I think, he went to Russia, I think that's all it is. His brother was asked to come to Russia. That's where the accident fellow was. And then he came back, I think I told him,
with the diamond?
Diamond to his heels, and then he sold the diamonds, and then he didn't see me because he was in Chicago and I was in Seattle then. And he says, well, I says, we'd like to have you come along to Russia. It's not fit yet. It isn't a millennium yet. It isn't fit yet for children. You have a nice home and you can, you can live comfortable and you'll see to it that you get enough money to live on.
Now, why did your husband then go exactly?
Well, he wanted to go because of the revolution, and I thought, well, now that we had the revolution, we're going to have a free country, and try and make it free like America, after the revolution. So, he went, and I had a sign, they come from the, you had to get a permission to go, or a visa.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a sign for the privilege of letting go. You see, I had a sign for it. Because they say, if he goes without my permission, then I'll become a burden upon the county. This way, if I say he can go, I have nothing, I'll have no complaint.
Mm-hmm.
So he went, and he was there about 8 months, and he came back and didn't like it.
Yeah, I'm already.
Now, Rebecca, what did he feel about the Soviet Union after the 8 months?
Well, he was so disgusted. Expected them to take over, they're going to, be human beings and act nice and try and make things comfortable for people and all that, and he didn't like it because the few that took over. They took over and took everything over and did everything that was good for themselves. They had the banquets, they had the more fun clothes, they didn't drink a lot and everything, and didn't care about anybody else. The poor woman used to stand outside of the Kremlin, the office, and they, for a piece of sugar, they go to bed with you. They were so hard up. My husband couldn't stand it, so he came back.
Now, after that, then you became pretty disillusioned with a lot of the left causes.
Oh, yes. Because they were talking about they wanted to do so much and going to do so much, and then they turned around and did so little. So,
So very early you didn't support the Soviet Union then?
And then there was an article in the paper the other day, because I don't read Yiddish, but it's in the Yiddish paper, where he was beheaded. You see, his husband, his brother, was quite an intelligent fellow. He wasn't really very right and intelligent. So they had him teach a school, a children, history and so on. So he was telling the children history, he was telling them about Jewish history. So somebody screwed on him that he was talking about Judaism, and Jews had to be out. Didn't say anything about Jews. So they said that he's teaching the children Jewish history. So they beheaded him.
Now, when your husband went, did he initially plan on staying?
Yeah, he didn't intend to stay in. He'd stay a while and see how he likes it, how things are, then he would take them.
I see. Yeah. I see.
That's what he said. He says, when I'll go back to your father, he said, millennium hasn't come yet.
Mm-hmm.
And America is still better for children than it is here. But in time, so that's all.
Oh, I see. So right after the revolution, you were very excited about it and wanted to live there and really be involved.
Well, I liked it because they overthrew the Tsar. Mm-hmm. That was something.
Mm-hmm.
And people had a nerve enough of that. That's in such a position they could throw over the Tsar. That was something. But you expected that throw over the Tsar that they become a humanitarian society. Instead of that, they became an autocrat, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And my husband couldn't stand it.
Now, what was the relationship like with your husband? What led to your divorce then?
What led to him? He was very drunken, I told you.
You didn't tell me that.
Oh, yeah. For the 1930s, you see, my husband didn't think much of me. He just thought I was just a woman, or the woman. If I'm sick, for instance, I read Margaret Mead's Love.
What, in Samoa?
Huh?
Life in Samoa?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know that. Who wants to know? We went to a lecture and we wanted to talk about it. They said, don't bother me, who cares? See, they didn't think much of me. So anyway, we got saved on after all his three children and so, making a living. So then we lived in Oakland. We had a nice house, seven-room apartment house. And he was writing. Picking on junk, and besides that, he was bright. He was writing on paper. And he wrote on paper, and he had the ads in the paper and all that, and he had a woman help him, a nice woman help him. So then depression came along and he couldn't pay rent for 3 months. the neighbors came in, they saw that we didn't have anything to eat. So I wore shoes and the rain would come in one way and out the other way. One day I go to the closet and look for something. I see a bottle of whiskey, a half a gallon of whiskey. And at that time there was prohibition time too in Los Angeles, in Washington. I says, Ben, I says, you doing that? I says, we're starving. We're starving to death. We haven't paid the rent. They'll close us out pretty soon. And you're in the middle to go and buy him a whiskey? He says, you understand Jewish, don't you?
A little bit.
He says, that's my 11. That's my life. He says, that's what I 11 to Levis. That's your life, you live it. He says, well, what's your life? I'm leaving you. That's why he says, you're leaving. How are you going to money? And I said, see this thing here? And that's when I left him. And I didn't leave him directly. My oldest son was already up in home colony, staying with Jake Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger one, he was about 11 years old, I think. And he said, I asked him, I said, Eugene, I said, if you would you mind if I leave you here, are you there? He says, Mother, any place at all, I live in a basement, anywhere, as long as away from that, because the Ian is letting me alone.
Uh-huh.
So, that's another.
So it was never really a very good marriage, though.
No, not a good marriage, no. It was really, I tolerated him because he was, well, children or something, children, and it was nice to the boys and so on. But, I think you read that I gave you that book to read, or so I gave it away to my daughter, the woman that works for us. She helped in the paper. She says that, I buy you for your tolerance, how you can tolerate and learn. But you're learning.
Well, Rebecca, did he feel this way towards all women or just you, do you think?
What?
That not really having much respect.
No, most women, you know, because some people have nice husbands, probably, or they think they're nice. But I expected of a husband to be a husband, a companion, one you can talk to, one you can discuss, one is interested in the same things or similar things that you're interested in. And not just have a man to go to sleep with or to make a living for. It's like making a living, I can make a living for myself. But he wasn't interested in that. So. And I'm not a bit sorry that I left him.
Now you're still in touch with him though, aren't you?
No, he's dead.
Oh.
He died. He committed suicide.
Oh.
Yeah. He came back. I have a letter. I don't know how to say it. Oh, what a miracle up here with me. He kind of wants to come back and how sorry he is and what he's done and all this and that and how it admires me and I'm this and that and all. Nothing to do, nothing. Yeah, I said, I'm satisfied. I'm quite satisfied the way I am. No.
It was very important to know that you could make a living, because
yeah.
Then you can leave him when you wanted to,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
That I was sure. I made a nice living. I was interested. I knew what I wanted to do. I went where I wanted to go, and I was recognized. So, so that's what made my life a little bit more interesting. They gave me the plaque when I was 8 years old. I was the only woman got a plaque, nobody else had a plaque. See, all them.
Mm-hmm.
There was one woman that she was a stenographer. And she was a secretary. But I was a chairman. Here. No, on that token there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you write that from the trophy there? That was from the. And I was chairman for 13 years in the club. And now I'm, they call me up, right? Some satisfaction out of life.
What do you feel about what's happened with women? Since you were a young woman in Chicago fighting for women, do you think there have been changes for women since then?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of changes do you think have happened?
Well, women have become more, a little bit more, well, educated and more knowledgeable, the women, of course, go on. The women also demand rights. The kill is done, and it's done quite a bit. You see? Well, my daughter, my granddaughter, goes to Santa Barbara College. My son was here last month, yesterday, Sunday, my son daughter. She's taken up study of womanhood, teaching in school. Now that, I didn't have that before. That means that woman is being recognized. That means something. Because woman wasn't recognized. A woman is being, woman was a housewife. It's a woman today. There are a lot of women there against us. You know that. It's saying that woman's place is in the house. Raise children and take care of them. I think it's all right to do that, sure. We have children, we should raise them. us. We don't have to sit on the side and let the men go off and do what they want, say what they want, and ignore the woman. What do you know? I'd say, talk about something. What do you know? What do you know about it? What do you know? Well, going to a lecture. I'm going to remember some great lecture, going to a lecture, it was in the Comas area, in the Comas. So after we came out, and he and his fellow lady in here, Hammersmith, we went out together. I started talking, I said, wasn't it great? Didn't you say that? Oh, shut up, who wants to care? Who wants to listen? Who do you want me to talk about? How can you live with a man? And that's the way most of them have. Yeah, what does a woman know? All a woman knows is cook a meal and then go to bed. Like the author likes to choose. You know the author likes to. In the shul, the men sit on one way, side, and the women on the other side. It's only a joke. So here, there's a blind man and wife. Whites can see, the blind man is blind. I go in to see, talk to them once in a while. They're quite intelligent people. Only the little religious, which I am not. So, she has to wheel him into the chair, and wheel him into the shoe. So Yom Kippur, the rabbi said that she can sit by him. He sat there amongst the men and she can sit by him. So she told me this, she felt so embarrassed. She felt terribly embarrassed to sit amongst so many men. And the woman back there seeing the woman sitting amongst men, she felt embarrassed. I said, isn't that crazy? I said, A man can go to bed with a woman, but in the shul they mustn't sit together. Isn't that, that's a situation now. That's why.
Well, so you feel very positive about things that have changed in the course of your life?
Oh yes, yes. I think that you've accomplished a lot. I think you're human. And I think Nancy Reeves wrote a book. There's a few books about women. Women are studying now, studying in the colleges about women, what they've done. And that's progress. That's progress. I know when I was a child, my mother said, my father said, a girl don't have to know what to do. I don't know how to do Yiddish. A boy has to know how to read a Siddur because he has to be a mitzvah. But a girl don't have to be. All a girl has to do is wash dishes and then get married and have children, that's all. Oh, well, what kind of human beings are we? Then we can stand for that kind of stuff.
Well, when you would talk about these things in the early days, Rebecca, did you have trouble reaching women about this, though?
Yes, I did. I told them. I used to go out to women to talk to them, and then some would say, well, you're right, but what can I do? What can I do? What can this do? And then some would take a faith. Some would take a faith.
Were they afraid of their husbands to do anything?
They were afraid of their husbands, and they said, well, that's their place. And the women were not interested, they didn't care. And we started a club in here, I think it was in Los Angeles. Yeah. We started a club, a women's club, a women's women's club, working circle. Workman's Circle and Women's Club. Yeah. And so we started it, and then one woman, supposed to be very intelligent, I said, now, I says, let me read books, you know, and discuss books. I says, that's the time when Einstein came out with relativity, you know. I said, let's take out the book of relativity. She says, relativity, who wants to know about his relatives? Well, that's that. So, I mean, after all, the woman, wasn't a term, didn't know enough, didn't understand enough. A man, a woman is a human being too. Why shouldn't she know as much as a man? Why shouldn't she be interested in the race, in the human race? You see? That's why.
Was this in Los Angeles that you started another women's branch of the Workman Circle?
Yeah, in Los Angeles. I started one in Seattle.
In Chicago.
And I started one here.
Now the ones in Chicago, they were mainly younger, independent working women, weren't they?
Yeah.
Now, was that true here, or were these wives mainly of working men?
No, yeah, there were some of the wives of the men. They were interested. Some of the women were radical women, supposed to be radical, more or less. But they didn't believe in organizations and anything like that.
Rebecca, did you find that people, women and men both, who were supposedly radical, were radical about other things, but when it came to women were not very radical? Did you have that experience?
Yeah. When it came to women, and women were not that. Mm. That's what I say. Who wants to know about relatives to see how that.
Now, how about with the IWW? How did they feel about women? Were they radical about women,
yeah,
too?
They made no distinction. So, either man or woman, at all, like, yeah. That's why they gave me such a big applause when this woman talked about me, because I was an IWW in the beginning.
So you feel positive about all the things that you've been involved in all your life?
Do I feel positive? Well, I don't feel positive about it, but I think there's a possibility. There's a great possibility. What I didn't like is that men push women away aside. Women just a bed companion, that's all. I know when my mother told me how she got married. My mother lived on a small village, and I understand it was maybe a lake, island, a little island. And she was about 17 years old. Her mother died very young, and her father was left with two children. It was 17 and it's time that she get married. So he wrote into a big town, the bigger town in Russia, that he's got a daughter like never, she's a mate. So, and the matchmaker came in, talked to the father and also the girl. And the girl asked, I'll bring a man for your daughter. So my mother, this is what my mother told me, she says, a man came, oh, what a man, such a miserable, big beard and moustache, and said the shoes was smeared with grease wheel, you know, grease that they use on the wheel, they call wheel grease, and the shirt was sticking out of his sleeves and all that. Oh, she says, if I knew that I could run away from here, I would run. But I was afraid, if I run from here, where would I run? I'd run into the water. She's this one said, must have been an island to the river. If I run from here, she says, I'll run into the water. Where would I run? So I had to take it. Didn't know the man, didn't see the man, did nothing, get married.
And that was your father?
My father. Mm-hmm. And that's the way my father felt toward the children too. So what kind of life is that? What kind of world is it when people live like that? Let's see. That's why.
Do you remember when women in the United States got the vote? What happened when they, was there a big change, do you think, when they got the vote in 1920?
Yeah, It was quite a change when Mussolini worked for it. I couldn't do much work because, first of all, I had no education. I could not talk. You know, you read my autobiography. I had no education. I had no language. I didn't have a language to talk to. Go on. For instance, to Margaret, what's her name?
Margaret Sanger?
Margaret Sanger. She could stand up on this million porch. She could stand up and talk. And all of me could stand. I couldn't do that. I didn't have the language to talk. Then I had no money to travel around, like, but I was in favor. I was in favor of all of it. Yes, I was very much in favor of it. Because I was mistreated. They're going out on the...
During the 20s, Rebecca, do you remember anything about the women who called themselves the flappers? How did you view women like that who were involved in all of that?
Well, see, in the 20s, I was working, and I didn't. I was working in the union. I couldn't do much in the, but I was very much in favor, and I talked in all the shops and she sent me that book. Mm-hmm. Harry's white book. So that was nice. She said, when I lived in a liberal movement, I was in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're going to be fighting the rest of your life, anyhow.
Yeah.
Now that you got the raise, what are you going to fight for next?
Did I get the raise?
That you got them to raise is $15, you told me.
Yeah.
So what are you going to work on next now?
Well, that comes up, I don't know.
I saw on yesterday's paper where someone left the home $220,000. Did you see that?
Yes. Oh, yes, lots of millionaires.
What are they going to do with it?
Well, they claim that it comes.